there.
I'll have to move that way.
Yeah, that's true. You have to move over there. Hi.
Hello. There's our small group.
Small group, but we've got Gordon.
Recording in progress.
Good, no rain.
No rain. I didn't set any alarms.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Are you solo? You were sleeping like a baby.
I was sleeping like a baby.
I'll leave this.
I'm going to scoot over because I don't want to be confused.
No, that's fine. Wait, you don't want to be associated. You don't want to be associated with
okay,
me.
Okay, we're not official yet, right?
No.
I'm going to move. I don't want to be associated with
you. I sat by you
Here's
on
my
fundraising
letter.
Thank you. Personal delivery. You can feel free to share it as appropriate. It's not official, but... Please do, as appropriate.
I love the color.
Hi there.
We get to go to Bowman.
And I drove, because I had to drive over to the Habitat Restore and meet with
the
here. So I'm like, I'll get a
microphone
after this meeting that I told her.
Well, they're all red. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Nope, you're good.
Get one more, I guess, just in case.
I have decided to do
I was trying to get you to tell me what you wanted. You
my clippers
do
that.
I can't do that.
You
no,
never
today.
Do that.
I can say I have to kind of figure it out.
So somebody texted me.
Like, the only...
Good morning.
How's it going today?
Well, you know, when you start...
Familiar faces.
Suddenly just expanded the board.
That would be a little conflict, I feel like. We were all.
Yeah.
That's for you.
Oh, that's tall.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
I might be a little too short, but.
So
yes.
There's a woman.
I'm combobulated.
The one you met last time.
Mm-hmm. 91-year-old erected. Okay, finally.
I actually think you're good. That's it.
Yeah, they sent a corrected bill saying she owes nothing, but we have
one of the people there,
which was double.
Should have been.
Oh, goodness. And so I went out.
What's wrong with yes, we went to
Philadelphia.
Check is in the mail.
Sounds like we'll be at some point.
Yes.
Another 10 years. He's like, no.
Except for approval of the agenda.
Yes, there he is. I don't really even
guided by me. Well, there's really
We will.
I thought it'd be better to have it because we're having the report of the evaluation project, which of course is in the bulletin, but
we ask people to come join us at the circle too.
And then, and then they're all.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't they?
We go to Tennessee and.
Just want to have their bill. There's a kids' table down there. So.
It's just like I could be a coffee shop.
Yeah, so this won't be.
Like I hate people most of the time, so.
When I.
It was originally.
And I loved it.
And maybe it was. This room is so complicated now.
Get a second job.
It is. Yeah, that was the last one with the.
I've got July 29.
And we don't have that on our surprise.
Because we have put the.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Schedule is not set out in the paper.
Unexpected.
Next meeting day.
You guys don't treat people well. This is not the most important.
I thought I was being helpful.
Very bad.
I don't think they have.
Well, you were. I just got.
One extra day.
Can you get me? Okay, United Way.
That was fine. That was all good.
Everybody just.
That was. No.
Just reminding them.
The asterisk.
July 29. Look at this chair.
That's correct.
Here.
And try it. Then I call in sometimes and my son.
Transit.
Yeah.
Just because I made a mistake.
But if nobody asks for the instructions, say, hey.
I'm trying to be fair.
I don't know what I did.
I think
it's fine.
I think it's.
Well, I did a super nice bike ride yesterday. I got my 500 mile. Yesterday.
It means a female power.
No, in 1 month.
In 1 month?
In 1 month.
I mean.
Still.
I'm truly proud of myself.
Well, you know, my pledge is I'll ride 500 miles on my bicycle.
Yeah.
Because I don't.
I was thinking it was 6 months, but it's not. It's just, there's a 6 month kind of transition.
And that's my pledge.
And then.
I've been doing this for 25 years and several of my donors said, Ann, nobody cares if you ride 500 miles, you know. Just ride it.
So it'll, I need to get.
But, you know, I used to.
Calendar for the calendar.
That was the original one, was the Habitat 500. It was 500 miles in 1 week, supported by Minnesota Habitat for Humanity.
And you got a new phone.
And we did camping at schools, so you could either set up your tent in the school.
You'll have it.
And I did.
Somewhere. Hopefully not someplace that the sprinkler system would come on in the middle of the night. That happens. Or you could camp indoors in the gym or the hallways.
I gave you a spot at the end if you want to come up. Sorry.
So we camped at schools, we were fed by churches, and we rode from town to town in Minnesota. And I did that for 19 years until COVID. And then COVID, you know, put a stop to things. And they never really got it re-going in Minnesota. But I switched over to doing, because the COVID year we did virtual, which meant we did our fundraising. We rode on our own, self-supported. So I got, you know, I was like, I'm going to just do that. So that's what I've been doing since 2020.
I think that's.
So what week is it, Ann?
What?
What week is it? Do you pick the week? Is it?
Well, I don't do 500 in a week anymore. I do 500 in a month, and I did the month of June. And I did my 500 as of yesterday. So anything I do now is gravy.
Hey, y'all, we haven't quite started yet. Just folks on the Zoom asking if we've started. You can hear us, right? Okay, sorry about the delay. Okay,
I'm going to call the meeting to order. Can we have a roll call?
I can do it. Let's see. We've got Neil Sharma, Kim Fisher. She is not
here, but online.
She's not in the room, but is online. Diane Gordon.
I'm here.
Susan Fowler. And Ann Robin.
I'm here. So, as anticipated, we do not have a quorum in the room, which means that we cannot vote in the people who are showing up online to have an official meeting. So this is a meeting that is unofficial. We do not have a quorum. So this is going to be an information-only meeting. We are not going to vote on any items that require people to vote. We will defer that to our July meeting, which I want to note will be July 29. And Lynn will send out an email after this meeting to everybody confirming that that date is July 29. That is the only meeting of the year that we have to have by law. So hopefully we will be able to have a quorum on that meeting. And I encourage board members to try really hard to have a little quorum right here in this room so we can vote anybody else in. Thanks to the people who are online. We note your presence and we appreciate you here, but we do not have to vote you in because we are having an unofficial meeting.
I might, rather than send an email out to people, since I don't know who, I don't have all the emails of everyone who might be interested in attending. All the public postings have the correct date, July 29th. The only incorrect date is at the end of this agenda where I was trying to be fancy, and it's wrong. So
she put next meeting date at the end of this agenda, and she got the date wrong. Yeah. So it is July 29, just confirming the next meeting. So I'm going to move on my printed agenda, which is unofficial, to citizen input and public participation. Is there anyone who wants to make a comment? Yes.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jacinda Derridis from the Family Resiliency Center, and we will be hosting an event on June 30th, and I'm going to share my screen. It is going to be... Can you see this? We are doing a premiere of some videos that we have created from different people within the community to do community healing. And so it will be on June 30th at 5:30 to 7:30. And I'm going to show a short promo video so that you can see what the event is going to be like. Please share the information. I can have Lynn send it out to everyone as well. So let me share my video. Okay, we can post it online. Here we go.
With the resources that have been given to give underrepresented communities, Black communities.
AXO,
the National Council of Negro Women.
Certified Theta Fraternity in the Midwest region.
NAACP Champaign County.
Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. Opportunity to get their history and their name out, where they're no longer a best kept secret. When we think about healing, I think it is a complex situation.
There's a lot of history in a lot of the families here in town, and sometimes it takes hearing other people's stories.
Something like this could be considered healing because you get to get a relief feeling of like, we're doing the work of the organization, you kind of talking it out.
I think Healing Illinois is an opportunity to bring history
out of the basement and out of the graveyard into the world.
So Nate Underland created videos. There will be 6 videos that will be presented in discussion. There will also be dinner and child care. So if people have children, they can bring them and be rest assured they'll be taken care of while they can watch the videos and have a conversation about how to heal in our community. So thank you.
Could you repeat again the time and the venue so that we can get that down clearly? I saw it flash by, but it was a little fast.
Yes, so it's going to be Tuesday, June 30th, and it starts at 5:30 with the dinner, and then programming begins at 6, and it's going to be at the Urbana First United Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. It'd be great so we can get a count for food. And they can RSVP at Chandra, Chandra, at ccmhb.org. Or you can email me, that's fine. Dariotis@illinois.edu. Not Doritos.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Are there any other public participation citizen input? Okay, I will keep my remarks very brief. Once again, thanks to staff for your excellent reports. Lynn, I could barely have enough time to read all of your activities. I can't imagine that you actually did all those things, much less reported on them, but thank you for doing that. And it's very, very impressive what staff are doing on behalf of our community. Thanks, everybody, for all the work that you did over the last several months. Last month's meeting was very successful, so we can have a relaxed time this meeting. And I look forward to hearing from the Evaluation Capacity Project.
Thank you, Anne. My activities look more impressive because they're really like a summary of 6 months of activities. Because I often my focus is on the board packet and getting you those materials, but there are lots and lots of other things going on. They don't always rise to the level of even worth including in comments, because a whole lot of what I've been involved in is waiting and seeing what would happen with federal policy changes. And we're in a moment now where, okay, we can see what's coming, and now I've been attending some webinars to try to understand how Illinois is going to interpret some of the new policies. I am very concerned about Illinois' presentations of the new rules. They seem to be reading from PowerPoint presentations, information that we all already have. Maybe that's a really negative take on it, but I think the first wave of changes is coming so quickly that I'm getting the sense that maybe Illinois is not going to be ready. This will affect lots of recipients of Medicaid, but the people we're most concerned with are recipients of Medicaid waiver funding. That's a huge part of community-based care. And the most recent federal policy change that's now on the table is even more alarming than that. So I've become more involved. I've met with some the staff of U.S. senators who are on the Finance Committee to talk about it, shared some Illinois-specific information about our home and community-based services, the specific waivers that we use, and how Illinois has actually fallen short of the dream of community-based care. So it's a terrible time to tell states not to worry about it anymore, because we sure do have institutions. We don't have another meeting scheduled, but they've asked us for information, and I think that all of you have access to the ways to give public comment on these rules. I think there was a pretty productive post-MHDDAC meeting email blast yesterday with information about that and ways to share public comment. So anyway, I haven't been including that stuff in the board packet because there's really no reason to worry about it till you know what there is to worry about. But now we know. And so it's going to be a busy summer, I think, for a lot of us advocating and creating testimony. And I'll keep everybody in the loop as possible. Thank you. I think that's it. And what a depressing set of comments. Yay for the state of Illinois increasing the DSP hourly wage. That was great. And a lot of credit has been given to They Deserve More Coalition, but really there are many, many coalitions and active advocates in the state of Illinois saying the same things for years. So I think the credit is owed to a lot of people in this room as well. A really important shift. So that's the good news. Okay, now I feel comfortable to stop making comments.
Thank you for that, Lynn. There will be more to come. Okay, I'm going to just go immediately to the new business, the evaluation capacity building project update. And thank you for that wonderful write-up in the packet. It's so clear.
Great. Thank you for that positive feedback. I'm going to have two things. First, we're going to show you a micro-learning because it's brand new. And we'll see, get any feedback we can have on that. And then I will give an overview of the report. Does that sound great? All right. So I'm going to share. All right. Here we go.
Today we're going to talk about using Microsoft and Google Forms as tools to collect your program's data. And so this microlearning is appropriate for agencies that might not have access to an expensive survey platform, or for agencies where people in charge of evaluation are out providing direct services and don't spend as much time at their computers. As a quick disclaimer, the Family Resiliency Center is not affiliated with Google or Microsoft. We just think these are useful tools for agencies to use. Before we get started, I want to share a little bit about survey data collection. Surveys can help us answer questions like, are people satisfied with the quality of services? To what extent is the programming achieving its target goals? How do people describe their experience with the program? Standalone survey software such as Qualtrics or RedCap can be really expensive and sometimes difficult to learn how to use. Your team may opt to use paper surveys instead, but this may mean that a staff member needs to create a database and hand enter data. This can be capacity limited and introduce an added hiccup of incorrectly entering data. Google and Microsoft Forms offer a free and relatively user-friendly option to collect data and review the data all in one place. This microlearning walks through programming a survey in each platform. We're going to discuss Microsoft Forms first. So if your team uses Google, you can fast forward through this part. So first, we need to get to the site. You can type in forms.microsoft.com and log in with your Microsoft credentials. If you use Outlook with your agency, it's likely the same username and password combination. At the top of the screen, you should see a clickable icon that says New Form. This is the main interface you will use to create your survey. On the top of the screen, you will see Untitled Form. You can click there to add in your own survey title. Next, you may want to create an introduction to the survey for the person meant to complete the survey. To do this, you can click in the field below the title to write this text. It might say, Dear Agency Program Participant, we need your feedback about this program, and whatever other information you think is important for them to know, such as how long it might take or that their response won't influence their ability to get services. Now we're ready to start adding our questions. You may use the Quick Start With feature to add your first question. You'll see options including choice, text, rating, date, ranking, Likert, upload file, net promoter score, and section. Options we see used a lot include choice, text, and Likert, so we'll share a little bit about that here. You can also use the PDF tutorials that were created to go with this video. Choice provides a list of responses for the respondent to choose from. You can also click the multiple answers button and specify check all that apply in your question. This may be appropriate for race and ethnicity questions, for example. The next option is text. Text allows for someone to type their own words. This option is good for open-ended questions. For example, you could ask, what are some ways our team could improve the program? And then finally, Likert questions let people respond to statements on a scale. So for example, rate how much you agree with the following statement, where 1 means strongly disagree and 5 is strongly agree. Another feature that Microsoft Forms includes is branching. This means that participants will be directed to a different section based on how they answer a question. For example, you could add different sections for new and existing participants. In this example, you could ask someone if they are a new or existing participant, and based on how they respond, the survey will take them to the appropriate section. You can access this function when you click on the question box and click on the 3 dots in the bottom right corner. This feature may not work for every type of question. And then once you finish programming the survey, you can preview your work. To do this, click on the preview button at the top right of the screen. This lets you see what the recipient will see, and you can edit accordingly. And depending on your goals for the survey, you may also want to edit survey settings. You can see your options by clicking on the settings button at the top right of the form next to the gear icon. This lets you decide settings like who can respond, whether you want people to be able to respond twice, and if you want to be notified about surveys being completed. Once you're happy with the questions and settings, you can collect responses. To start this step, click on Collect Responses at the top right of the screen. Here, you will also have the opportunity to make setting decisions. You can either share a link, add someone's name, download a QR code, or copy an HTML tag for embedding the survey into your website. Now you're ready to collect survey data using Microsoft Forms. Let's do the same process using Google Forms. First, we need to get to the site. You can type in forms.google.com and log in with your Google credentials. If you use Google with your agency, it's likely the same username and password combination. At the top of the screen, you should see a clickable icon that says blank form. So go ahead and click on that. This is the main interface you will use to create your survey. On the top of the screen, you will see untitled form. You can click there to add in your own survey title. Next, you may want to create an introduction to the survey for the person meant to complete the survey. To do this, you can click in the field below the title that says Form Description to write this text. It might say, "Dear Agency Program Participant, we need your feedback about the program, and whatever other information you think is important for them to know, such as how long it might take or that their responses won't influence their ability to get services." And now we're ready to start adding questions. When you click on the first question, it may have automatically created a multiple choice option, but you can change this by clicking the menu in the top right of the question box. You'll see options such as short answer, paragraph, multiple choice, checkboxes, dropdown, file upload, linear scale, rating, multiple choice grid, checkbox grid, date, and time. Options that we see used a lot include multiple choice, short answer, or paragraph, and multiple choice grid, so we'll share a little bit more about that here. You can also use the PDF tutorials that we've created to go with this video. Multiple choice provides a list of responses for the respondent to choose from. You can also click the multiple answers button and specify check all that apply in your question. This may be appropriate for race and ethnicity questions, for example. Short answer or paragraph allow for someone to type their own words. This option is good for open-ended questions. For example, you could ask, what are some ways our team could improve the program? Multiple choice grid questions let people respond to statements on a scale. For example, rate how much you agree with the following statement, where 1 is strongly disagree and 5 is strongly agree. I'll show you briefly how this works. In the rows, you enter your statements, and in your columns, you enter your response options. When you go to add a new question, you'll see that this turns into a grid. Another feature that Google Forms offers includes is something called Go to Section Based on Answer. This means that participants will be directed to a different section based on how they answer a question. For example, you could add different sections for new and existing participants. In this example, you could ask someone if they are a new or existing participant, and based on how they respond, the survey takes them to the appropriate section. You can access this function when you click on the question box and click on the three dots in the bottom right corner. This feature may not work for every type of question. Once you've finished programming the survey, you can preview your work. To do this, click on the button that looks like an eye at the top right of the screen. This lets you see what the recipient will see, and you can edit accordingly. Depending on your goals for the survey, you may also want to edit survey settings. You can see your options by clicking on the Settings button at the top center of the form. This lets you decide settings like whether to collect email addresses or limiting each participant to one response. Once you're happy with the questions and settings, you can collect responses. To start this step, publish your survey at the top right of the screen. Once it's published, you'll have the option to manage who can respond and copy the link to share with participants. Now you're ready to collect survey data using Google Forms. Once you start collecting survey data, you will be able to monitor the responses using these same systems so everything is in one place. And as a reminder, you can access possible survey measures accessible on Google Drive. Thanks for watching.
So that was our latest and greatest micro learning, which we had completed right before we submitted our report. And we actually had an in-person session yesterday where we went through evaluation plans, and we had 25 people attending. And we had an add-on for an hour afterwards to go through how to create surveys with very hands-on, informal types of training. And so that was attended by several people who stayed for our add-on. So very exciting stuff for empowering people to do their own surveys and collect their own data in low cost and highly scalable ways if they don't already have a system available to them. So.
I have a question.
Yep. Do you want to turn your microphone on?
I have a question. Paula Finnell from Thanks. And we've been working with you. Could everyone, like, if I said that to people on my books of phones, can everyone open it if they don't have Microsoft?
So if you send it to people to complete, they can complete the survey. They don't, but if they want to program their own survey, they should have access to Microsoft. And then if they don't, they can use Google Forms instead, if they have a Google account, which is free to everyone.
So that if I don't use Google Forms, because everyone can do that.
So the question is, should everyone use Google Forms because everyone can get a free account? I would say I'm not going to endorse.
No, I mean, if you send that to someone that don't have Microsoft, can they do that in Microsoft form?
Yeah, so the question is if someone doesn't have a Microsoft account, can they still complete the survey? And the answer is yes. So anyone that you send it out to doesn't have to have a Microsoft Exchange or that type of email to answer your form.
Okay.
The only thing that's required is if you were to go program a survey in, you need access to Microsoft to do it in Microsoft Forms because you have to sign in. Yeah, but anyone you send it to can do it. They don't have to have a Microsoft account. Same thing with the Google Forms. If you send it to someone, they don't have to have a Google email because you open it up to anyone who has the link that you send them to fill out the survey. That's
but
a really
they
good question.
Need good self.
They don't need Microsoft to complete the actual survey. And they don't need a Google account to complete the actual survey. But you, as okay. part of PACE, programming it in,
yes.
need to either have a Google email to do Google
yes.
Forms or a Microsoft email to do Microsoft Forms. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. So now I'm going to turn to our report, because you've been waiting and excited about it. Also, I should say, because I probably have forgotten, happy hump day, everybody. It is Wednesday. I know you were waiting. I didn't want to say it immediately, just keeping you on your toes, okay? Maybe you forgot today is Wednesday. We're super excited to come and talk about the empowerment and participatory approaches to building agency evaluation capacity project. Just to let you know, you're getting the first presentation, not just because you come earlier on the day on Wednesday, but because the Mental Health Board is not meeting this evening. So they have to wait a whole month and a couple of weeks for this. Can you believe it? But they can watch the video online in advance when it's posted. So we're very excited to give our third year report. This year, we're really talking about equipping programs through in-person and on-demand support, so we've been really revving that up. First, we'd like to give some gratitude and appreciation to agency staff and leaders, working group members who've given a lot of feedback before we've actually finalized these tools, but also have given feedback way in advance in helping us plan these to make sure that they are relevant and they're emerging in the needs of agencies and staff. And board members and staff for all of your support and funding to make this work happen. Our programs participating in our technical assistance, so this year we had three of them, and I'll talk about that. And then also, of course, the funding that we have received. As an overview for today, we're going to give a little bit of context, and we're going to revisit our project goals and strategies because those were set forth in year one, even though there's room for flexibility and adaptation as time has gone on. We're going to revisit those takeaways from year one and then also summarize our year three activities and then talk about our next steps for year four. So in terms of our context, the overarching goal, just as a reminder, is to build that evaluation capacity for the agencies, the staff, as well as the board in terms of using participatory and empowerment evaluation approaches. And that's a lot of jargon, so don't worry, I'll go through and explain what that actually is. But really trying to build that capacity so that one doesn't have to outsource it, because we know that these agencies and staff are doing a lot, wearing a lot of hats, and don't have a lot of funding to be outsourcing this to independent evaluators and firms. So it's important to build that capacity so that then they have it and can pass it on to other people in their agency and continue to do the good work that they're doing and demonstrate the outcomes and effects that they're having. So year one, we really were interested in determining what those agency and board needs, strengths, and expectations were, so that then we could plan our future activities and begin really moving into action. Year two is putting that into place using year one findings and creating those resources and engaging in relevant capacity building activities. And then in year three, really continuing the successes that we've had and relevant initiatives and creating new initiatives as we move forward to make sure that we are addressing the evolving needs in real time as we move forward. So one of our approaches is participatory. So this really means centering the voices of those who are going to utilize or are impacted by anything that we're doing. So that's really the agencies, the staff, the board. So using a more creating a more holistic understanding of the current capacities and what has worked and what remains needs so that we can address those as we go on. So really hearing from them directly instead of thinking, we think they need this. No, we're working with everyone who is going to be utilizing those resources from the start so that they can help us plan them and make sure that they stay relevant and that they are accessible. So empowerment evaluation is really the actual capacity building. So it's not keeping things to oneself and saying you have to outsource it, but it's really building that capacity so that they can do it themselves, so they can implement and sustain those practices and becoming continuous learners throughout this entire effort. Because evaluation work doesn't just happen once, it's a continuous effort, and we're continually learning and growing. So here's a schematic I like to use to show differences in participatory. There's such a thing called helicopter science or helicoptering in or helicopter parenting. You may have heard that. And that's really doing for and doing to. And then at the right end, it's really doing with and by, so creating that partnership and then also transferring it, the ownership, over to those who are end users, who are interest holders, who are more likely to be the ones who are impacted by the work. So really creating that partnership and then creating that capacity so that then it can be done with and by those over time. Should I pause for questions as I go through, or do you want me just to go through?
So this is not in the book, in the board packet, right?
The presentation is not.
Okay. Sorry, everybody. I didn't have a copy of it, so that's why the book isn't matching.
Yes, so this is taking a lot of what's in the report and putting it into schematics and pictures, and then we can make this available as well at the end. So this is a picture of empowerment evaluation, but if anyone has any questions up to now, do you want me to take questions as I go through? I'll just keep going through, and then we'll have questions at the end. So this is a picture of empowerment evaluation, and it talks about different ways of empowering or building that capacity. And so for this project, we do all four of these. We create tools, we create trainings, we do technical assistance, and we do quality improvement and quality assurance. And so as you can see, some of the tools that we do are the micro-learning videos, updated measures repository. We do trainings in terms of workshops that are both in-person and virtual. We've done some on outcomes, measures, storytelling, and so forth. We do technical assistance that's working intensively one-on-one with an agency and their staff for one of their programs. And then we also do quality improvement and quality assurance, which is using the working groups, utilizing them, coming to the board meetings, having check-ins with the board staff to make sure that what we're doing is on target or if we need to shift or pivot as we're going along. In year one, we had the needs assessment. We heard from 76 different perspectives, and that's where we identified different needs of the agencies and staff. And then we worked from there to create our year two activities and then also our year three activities. Some takeaways from year one were that board members and agencies wanted to be heard, so that participatory approach that we have is really important to make sure that we're hearing from them about their needs and the action plans. The resources that they wanted was knowledge, improvement of efficiencies, and storytelling, and they wanted to work together and moving towards a community of practice and having open communication. So year three is a continuation of some of our activities from year two. So this slide has both year two and year three. So that technical assistance, the tailored support for specific programs, and we change the program and agency that we provide technical assistance to in most years so that we can spread the love and work with different agencies and programs. Sometimes we may choose with the board staff in helping us to identify those programs. We may have a continuation if there's a program that needs additional support as we move forward. Our working group has this cross-agency mentoring and rapid feedback to us about what we're doing, if it's relevant, if we should stop doing something that we're doing, if we should start doing something that we're not doing. The trainings and resources, so that capacity-building materials that we provide freely available on our website as well, and our in-person trainings. And then our open communication and informal support. So really thinking about how do we continue to have touch points that are monthly, and also thinking about how do we have additional touch points that agencies can access us when they need us, if they haven't in the past. So we've created office hours this year, and then in the next year, in year four, we'll assess how useful those are for different agencies and programs. So in terms of our technical assistance in year three, we have three programs that we identified and we supported. They were less experienced in evaluation than our year two agencies. So that was really great to see that we are reaching those who are really in need and may not have had as much evaluation in their past. And they've been wonderful to work with, and we are continuing to work with them through the summer. We've improved their understanding through logic models, through survey development, and through administering surveys. And those agencies have reached over 5,000 clients themselves. So indirectly, our work is reaching almost 6,000 different people. In terms of the effect, all evaluation surveys that we sent out to our technical assistance partners demonstrated that they have been learning a lot, they have new skills, and that they intend to use those skills in the future, and they think that it's going to help with their improving their services and program quality assessment, which is really the goal of what we're trying to do. And they would recommend the technical assistance to others. In terms of our technical assistance, this is a picture that was in the report showing that our steps and having a kickoff meeting to explain the purposes of what the evaluation technical assistance is supposed to be and to also find out what the agency or program needs. Then for those that need a logic model, we utilize that. We then engage in technical assistance around how to collect data that they're going to need. We review different outcome measures that they're going to be collecting. We help them develop their survey and then data collection. And so this is a schematic of what the needs were for the three agencies and programs that we worked with, but this can vary in any given year depending on the needs of the different agencies or programs. And from the words of one of our technical assistance recipients is, I'm very appreciative of, this is Rachel Jackson Gordon, and the Family Resiliency Center in general for helping us improve our services. I have nothing but positive things to say, and I will happily recommend you to others. Thank you. So cross-agency working group, this is something we instituted in year two towards the middle part of that year, and it's been going strong. We have four agencies represented. We have three core members that meet regularly, meeting twice a month, and we are looking for more working group members. So if anyone is interested in joining the working group, please feel free in reaching out to us. We give different information on evaluation, and they provide a lot of feedback to us on our trainings in terms of content, how it's being delivered, troubleshooting different evaluation concerns that they have, and evaluation learning. So they learn as we go through this process. Even though they're not intensive technical assistance recipients, they do learn from the process of working together as a working group, and they learn from each other, so starting to build a community of practice. The effect it has is rapid feedback for us, so we don't have to wait. If we were to do an annual needs assessment, we actually keep our finger on the pulse of the needs of different agencies and programs through our working group participants. And so they provide rapid feedback on our products and our trainings. They share knowledge with each other. They build community with each other. They improve confidence that they have and understanding of the value of evaluation. And then also they learn survey design skills. At least this year we did go over that a bit as we were developing our trainings on surveys. So one of our working group participants said, I've learned a lot from this working group. I wish I would have had it when I first started. I have worked on some different surveys. I've learned a lot about how to make them. I'm not a data person. I'm a people person. But I have learned a lot from the data I've collected. They have helped me look at program and understand what to change or fix. That makes a big difference. You guys have made it easier for me to understand my job. So really talking about the different components of their experience with us in the working group and that they wish they had started it much earlier. So, but it's never too late to join. Our working group informed our trainings and resources. The content and resources that have come out of the group would be very beneficial to agencies who are willing to use it. So really talking about how agencies can benefit if they want to participate or access the different resources that we've created. And then our trainings and resources, we had a storytelling workshop. So storytelling seems to be a buzzword lately, but it's really important for agencies to know and programs to know what stories they want to convey into different audiences, and that's what this workshop did. So thinking about the various audiences, 12 agencies attended or more, and we have publicly available microlearnings from last year. We created three new ones, one on avoiding the data dump, one on avoiding and under-reporting and over-reporting, and also how to program a survey with low-cost platforms, which is the one I just showcased to you today. We have eight microlearnings in total to date. We have over 5,000 viewer player impressions, and over 300 plays are accessing of them. We also created a reference guide, so some people like things in paper or in black and white versus seeing videos, and so we've created different tools, so we have reference guides as well on our website so that people can access it, and this is all, those are ADA compliant. So what's the effect of all of this work? These are resources that are broadly shared across funded agencies and to other agencies that are not funded because they're freely available on our websites, and they can be accessed anytime, anywhere, except for our in-person or virtual trainings. But for those trainings, we typically build them off of or utilize our microlearning so that those can be resources, whether one can attend our training or not. And we also have office hours so that if somebody couldn't attend one of our trainings and they have questions on that topic, they can always reach out to us. So here's an image. I know the text is a bit small. On the bottom, it just is a listing out of each one of our microlearnings. And for each one of these graphs, so the one on the left has two columns. The first one was for year two about our player impressions. And you can see it gets almost to 2,000. But by year three, we're up to almost 5,000. So we have increased in each one of the categories for each one of our microlearnings. So more and more people are giving impressions about it. And we've also increased the number of microlearnings. But it's certainly outpaced what we had seen in year two. So word's getting out, keep spreading it, right? And in the column, in the figure to the right, these are actual plays, and it demonstrates that the plays have also increased from year two to year three and have increased for each one of the microlearnings, and we've also added the additional three. And the additional three, so the one number eight, was done really late, so the fact that it was accessed by so many so quickly is really encouraging. So to give a testimonial to our microlearnings, we had Susan Fowler who came out and said, I just love what you're doing. I taught research methodology for years at the university, and I would have very much benefited from some of these short micro lessons. People get so distracted by how and what to report, and we have really distilled it into a humorous as well as a cogent summary. So most of our microlearnings have some humor in them because, you know, that helps with paying attention. They're very short, though. They're 3 to 5 minutes, except for the one I showed you today. That was 10 minutes, but you could fast forward if you didn't want to use one versus the other. So we're keeping them short as much as we can. So for open communication and informal support, we come to monthly meetings for the boards because we really want to be in the know and also give back information of what we're currently working on. So if there's anything that we need to course correct or anything we need to think about moving forward, that we can do that in a timely fashion. We work with the board staff every month as well to be as a litmus test for that and get their insights and wisdom. We have offered office hours, and this is a no one has taken us up on office hours. Can you believe that? But so yesterday we collected a survey to find out what might be some barriers to office hour access. And it might be someone works at 10 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night, and it's really hard to access us at that time. Or it could be we don't know what we don't know. Or it could be we're just so busy because we have so many hats going on. So we're teasing that out to see what we can do to modify that. And we're also getting the word out more and more. So I'll actually pass out later some information that we've shared publicly available to say how to access our office hours so that everyone knows how to reach us. So the effect of our communication is increased cross-communication, and our annual report offers accountability for what we're doing and understanding of the evaluation team activities, so that's also important. And it is ADA compliant, so we're happy about that to make sure that anything and everything that we're doing is accessible. Our next steps for year four is to identify funded programs for technical assistance for next year. So new programs, or if we want to continue with any of them, that we would do that. We engage the board staff in helping to make that decision and making sure that we have representation from both mental health and developmental disability boards, board-funded agencies. We're developing new trainings all the time, so we're really listening to what people need and want, and in the future, we're probably going to do one on data visualizations, because who doesn't want to know how to visualize their data in ways that are better than what they've done before? Maybe. Huh? I hear some buzz. I want some interest in that. But we're always open to suggestions, so please let us know or join our working group, and then you can give us the inside scoop there. Evolving working groups, so into a community of practice, so it's not only us sharing information and them sharing information with us, but actually the group working in and of itself with each other to create that community of practice that then can soar on its own over time. And then assessing our office hours and how those work over time for the next year. So for specific and quick needs. So if anyone has a quick question about evaluation, they can always reach out to us. And that is my presentation. Questions, comments, concerns?
Just raise your hand if you want to ask a question. Diane?
Thank you very much. That was great information. I'm sort of new here.
Yeah.
And so my question is basically how do, when you say funded groups, I'm assuming that's people who are getting grants through the DD board. Are there opportunities for groups that maybe we weren't able to fund this year or groups that haven't asked for funding to participate that are supporting the disability community?
So it's any mental health and developmental disability board funded agencies and programs that have access to our technical assistance and so forth. Our hope is that when we think about going into year five, that we can start to build that into it, because when we wrote our proposal, that was not built into it. But I think it's a lovely idea, and it's been brought up by others. And remember, too, all of our resources are freely accessible to anybody. And so we spend a lot of time in creating those so that they'll be on demand and available for anyone, because not everyone can come to our in-person or virtual workshops too. So we really try to put a lot of investment into that. And even people who are not funded or even remotely involved with the mental health or developmental disability board funded agencies and programs can access those. And so other agencies have been spreading the word about those, and it's gone well beyond the state of Illinois too. So please help continue to spread the word. But if somebody has a major question, they can always reach out to us. You know, our office hours, they can come and do some office hours. And when those get so overwhelming, then we can, like, make any decisions. But we're open and open collaborators.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was told that both Kim and Susan online have their hands raised. Susan, you want to go first?
Thank you. I just want to reiterate how fabulous I think this investment has been by the board to support the participatory model of evaluation. It's such a valuable resource, I think, for our agencies to participate in. And the quality of the micro-learnings, I think, have just been outstanding. So I'm very, very happy, and I'm hoping that the 300 plays means that those are more than just 300 individuals that have played the recordings of the micro-learnings, because I think, again, they have great potential to be of value to many agencies. So if you could explain a little bit more what the 300 plays of the second graph, I think, that was presented. I would appreciate it. But good Great. Job.
Yeah, so the fact that we have over 5,000 impressions suggests it's meeting a lot more people than 300 plays. And so the 300 plays, I believe, are unique plays. So sometimes people will go and look at it again and again and again, and it's not capturing that. So sometimes the impressions, too, can be things of different components of the actual video and not just did you like it or not, right? So the plays are going to be – the impressions are going to be higher than the number of people who have been accessing it. But I'm not an IT person per se, and Nate's the one who generated that figure. But I can ask him, because they're different – so YouTube does things differently than others, and it's not all accessible. Let me rephrase that. Not all of them are the YouTube metrics. So we didn't have metrics necessarily from the very, very start of them, and that started later. So I think more people have accessed it versus 300 or so people. So I can give you a better answer in August as well. So
that's great. Thanks so much.
Kim Fisher has her hand raised.
Yeah. Kim, you're next, and then I'm going to ask Lynn to recognize people online since you have access to that. So, Kim?
Thank you. Hi, everyone. This is Kim Fisher. Just thank you so much for the work that you do and you and your team do, Jacinda. It's just fabulous, reiterating what everybody said. Because two things I had. One is I had a question about the technical assistance, the graph. And actually joining online lets me take screenshots and take notes. So that was really helpful. But so on that graph, you said like kind of the last step is data collection. And I just wondered, like, is that because folks kind of feel like when they got the data, they know how to interpret it, analyze it, interpret it, and like make it meaningful? Or is that just because there's just so much to do in technical assistance, you kind of stopped at data collection? So if you could just talk a little bit about that. And then the second question was, I feel this is maybe for the board. I feel like it'd be great to do a presentation like at, I don't know, the Arc of Illinois conference or something about this, which I'd be happy to submit. I mean, or we need to get the word out that this is happening here in Champaign, and mostly to just share the work that we're doing, that you're doing for the agencies and the hard work the agencies are doing, but also like for them to like share with their partners across the state. I think it would be a great dissemination. But anyways, the question about the data collection, I think, is the, or analysis is the first question.
Yeah, so what I would say is that we go based on the agency or program needs and their ability to meet and what their current capacity is. And so sometimes in a full year, getting through all the way through data collection and analysis and so forth is just too much for the agencies, because we're building up the capacity, let's say, of the other steps in advance, like creating a logic model, how to create your evaluation questions, what measures you're going to be using. And so being able to meet with them consistently over the course of the year, giving them soak time so that they can process what we've learned from a previous meeting, revisiting the logic models and their questions and the measures, takes a lot of time. So the fact that they even get to collecting their own data is actually a huge investment and a huge amount of their time and learning that's occurred, that getting them through the whole data analysis and so forth would probably need an additional year to move into all of that and how to analyze the data and how to process it and how to visualize it, how to disseminate it and how to implement it and work on it. That's why I said sometimes with some agencies we might want to work with for more than a year if we need to get them there. And also the agencies this year were, let's say, had less capacity in the evaluation realm than some in the past that had been doing some of the stuff so that they could have moved to data collection and analysis quicker. But we think that these agencies that we've worked with have worked through all of these different steps and have done a tremendous amount of time and energy to get there. But I do understand what you mean about, can we get them further than the data collection step? Did that answer
your
question?
Just real quick, it does. Real quick, I think that answer is helpful for the public, mm-hmm. like to understand kind of how much time folks need to collect really good data. So I so appreciate you distilling that information. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one person online, a member of the public online, who'd like to make comments. And then after that, there are a lot of people in the room too. So Jen Boy, you ready?
Yes. When you help much, you got only so much money, but then you said how are you going to get more people? And you know, for different services, for different agencies, are going, probably people get, there might be from vary from year to year, one gets more services for one department than another. How do you like evaluate, are you funding, and are you going to fund just like two or three agencies, or are you going to put more? Because like I've noticed like a lot of money's going to for like two whole, are you going to get more agencies to help with people with disability, more but then you can't fund, like, I don't see it how it could fund like two full agencies, or you would have to do split half the agencies, not fully fund all of them, and split them into, if you're going to fund more than just two or three, if you only got so much money, and where are you going to get extra money? And that's where I doubt, but I don't see where the extra money, and if you're going to do more agencies, then would you have to cut back on some sources for some agencies to make room for others? That's the question I would have for the board. If you only are not going to get any more money, then how are you going to make room for more agencies if you don't cut back for some?
Jen, this is Lynn. I'm going to answer your question because this is not related to the presentation and it is more a question for the board, but I'll tell you, it is exactly as you're presenting. It's a math problem. You have X amount of money. You have a certain amount of money. It doesn't grow according to what people need and want. It grows according to property taxes in this county. So we're very limited at exactly as you've said. So if you wanted to discuss this further with us or have a discussion with the board or with a particular board member, we could do that at a different time. I think you emailed about this and we responded. So maybe if you want to get back to the email with our staff, myself and Kim Bowdry, it would be, you're exactly right. We can't fund everything because we only have a certain amount of money. So it's divided up in the ways that according to like how well things match with the rules, how well they match with what people are looking for, that type of thing. But it is a very important topic. So it's just not what the evaluators are in charge of. So they probably want to fund everything.
So the evaluating, when you do the surveys, do you get it and base the funding on what department and agencies? Do you look at that? And
yes.
Also the agencies, and are you doing that? Or if they get a ton of people coming, or maybe because there's so many people hurting for money now. I mean, I can imagine a lot of agencies just rolling in, and like, how are you going to find all?
I think you're right. But it is a separate topic, and the evaluation team works on things to help the agencies. So I don't think we can really talk about this much further right now. If that's all right with you, we should talk about the evaluation project. Okay.
Great. So what I'll say in closing is that any and all of the agencies that have been funded have been touched by the evaluation project in one way, shape, or form, and can access any of the resources we have and can provide us with any insights into some things that they would need moving forward, and we continue to do that. And the whole point of the evaluation capacity building project is that agencies and programs get better at understanding what they need to demonstrate the effects and impacts of their program and what they need to have improvement for the clients that they're serving. And so, like I said, even if we had three technical assistant agencies, it seems like a small number, but reaching almost 6,000 people and clients that they have with that is huge. And that's not even accounting for those who have access to their micro-learnings and our in-person trainings. So we really appreciate the board seeing the wisdom and the value of this type of work and how many agencies and potential clients that we are continuing to impact, whether it's directly or indirectly. So I think the money is being used really well and going to great things. And we look forward to continuing to have another year, and hopefully more than that, in building that capacity so that the agencies can get the word out of what they're doing, and also they can continue to improve their services as they move forward.
Thank you so much for that. I just have a couple of comments of my own. First of all, the handout that you gave is excellent. The presentation is excellent. And I was struck by the clarity of the presentation, but also it looks to me that you are applying your principles of evaluation to yourselves, and you're just giving us a little demonstration of how that works and how it can be presented. So I got that, and it's good. And then there are two comments that came up a couple of times during the presentation that I just want to highlight. One of them is building confidence, which is very important because people often have the ability to do something, but they don't have the confidence to do it. So building confidence is really good, and also building community, which happens when we work together. So those are things that we always need, and I appreciate your recognizing those things. So those are my comments. Thank you very much for your presentation. It was excellent. I'm going to move on to old business. Kim, do you want to talk about emerging threats? Lynn talked a little bit in her remarks. I don't want to have a long discussion because it is 10 o'clock, and I told people we'd have a relatively short meeting, but this is an informational meeting, and I don't want to cut this out.
Hi, everyone. This is Kim. Thank you. Thank you, Anne. I will be very short. So thank you, Lynn. I don't have much beyond what Lynn said, except for the two things I was going to mention were the threat to Olmsted, which I think is kind of discussion that Lynn was getting at. So there are several take action items that folks can do through the ARC of the US, I think Access Living, many different advocacy agencies have kind of, you know, fill out this form and contact your legislator about that. And the second thing is the work that's being done to move the Department of Special Education out of the Department of Education into Health and Human Services, which would just destroy access to inclusive education opportunities and really be very difficult to fight civil rights violations. So the Council for Exceptional Children, which is a national organization in special education, has another quick, really easy form fill out, and it directly emails to our representatives. I know that recently Nikki Baczynski has a nephew with Down syndrome, so she's posted about it, but call her, go to her. I just, these two things, as well as the HCBS, I mean, all of it is very linked. So, and recently there's been some reporting about who's behind this federal work, so I would encourage folks to read up on that. So that's all I'll say.
Any other comments? Okay, I'm going to move on. Oh, Susan, you had your hand raised. I cannot see the virtual hand raised. So, Lynn, if there's a virtual hand raised, you just chime in.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to really emphasize what Kim said about the movement of OSEP, the Office of Special Ed Programs, to Health and Human Services. The intention is really to completely disassemble 50 years a very careful work in legislation to ensure that all children with disabilities have free, appropriate public education. I mean, the bottom line is that if disabilities are moved into a medical model, then we start to lose the ability to guarantee that all kids with special needs have access to education. And for those of us who started teaching prior to 1975, we remember that kids with disabilities were not attending school, or if they were attending, they were not getting many services. So this is just an incredibly diabolical plan to go around the legislation and to remove what has been for 50 years a guarantee of services. And it is there's also a call-in day in which you can call in to Congress and speak to senators or congressional representatives and protest. There was a similar event that happened during the Reagan administration about 40 years ago, and there were thousands and thousands and thousands of phone calls that shut down the the actual ability to it just shut down the phone system at the Capitol, and that was sufficient, along with the thousands of letters that were sent back before emails were available, to stop the process of disassembling. So this is not the first time it's happened, but it is the most deleterious and devious way that it's happened. So I think it really is important for people to speak up and to send emails and a phone call. It's really a disaster in the making. And if you take away services for children birth to 18, what's going to happen for young adults and older adults? It'll be gone too. So this is really threatening. Thank you.
Do you have that phone number for the Capitol? Is that for all of Congress that you said? Is there a particular one that speaks to all of Congress, or do you say just to your representative?
You can ask information, actually, to call the Capitol phone line for the Senate or the House, and they will give you the number. I don't have it in front of me. I certainly have emails from CEC that provide it, and I can send it to Lynn if she needs it to send out or to post.
Yeah, so that would be helpful.
Sure, I can do that. The issue for me with sending out emails is that I can't send them to the whole public. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's, and we don't really have a page. It probably would be inappropriate for us also as a government entity to do anything that looks like lobbying. So I don't have that information myself, but Jen, if you want me to help you figure it out, we can do that. Okay? You and me?
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Is there anyone else, Lynn, that's online? Paula?
Jen, please make it email today. I will forward it to you. I'm going to date myself. I was born in 76. So I was one of the first kids who was in early intervention, and I got services through the ETC. So that is very
Paula, it was a little hard for me to hear you. You turned your microphone off, and now you've turned it on again. Your microphone is now on.
Oh.
So turn it off, unless you want to talk. Were you asking a question at the beginning of your comments? Okay, and I appreciate your comments, and I know you are a person who benefited from public education, and look how well you're doing, and you're a great role model. Thank you. And I heard that, even though your microphone was off. Now I'm off. Touching these things, and they turn themselves off, too. So we kind of went on emerging threats and segued into input from people with ID. D, is there any other input that we should have at this time? Lynn, do you see anything online? Then I'm going to ask Susan to do an update on Engage Illinois.
Frankly, I can't do it because of my accident. I haven't been able to participate in phone calls, but I should be back on the Zoom calls in July. So I think business is continuing. Advocacy efforts are continuing, but I don't have an update. Thanks.
And I hope that you will be able to participate. Thank you. Any update on AIR?
I can do a brief expo update. In early June, I dropped off expo resource books with the Disability Services Program at the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission and at Community Choices. Both agencies were present at the Juneteenth celebration put on by the Well Experience last Friday, and I know as long as they have resource books available, and I will make sure that they have them. Community Choices is also going to have a table at the Jetty Roads Day, which is this upcoming Saturday, and they will be providing the resource books at their table as well. So Expo is still out there. We're still spreading the word through all of these other agencies and other community resource events. So Expo is still moving along in that regard.
Thank you. I've had this is actually in my staff report. I have had a little bit of, we just don't have anything put together for this year or next year for Expo or AIR events, but it's really feels so important to keep doing the community awareness piece. And I also feel like it's very difficult for the organizations that we fund to do the work we're funding them for and collaborate in every possible collaboration that there is. So there are all these practical issues around it. With AIR, there are a couple of other film festivals in this community, and I'm trying to have conversations with people who are involved in that. I'm not exactly sure what kind of involvement we could have or what kind of influence we could have on their film choices or what we could do as far as access for people that we serve. But I have gotten feedback from AIR members that they don't want to let that lapse just because there's no Ebertfest. So that's where I'm at. And I'm thinking about, do we need to create an RFP for anti-stigma awareness? Maybe this is a question I might bring to the board at some point, because it's just increasingly more difficult for these what have mostly been large groups of volunteers to support these things. It's the pressures that made it difficult last year are not gone. So that's it.
Yeah. Okay, we're ready for successes and other agency information. Who would like to speak?
Hello. I'm AJ from DSC. I just have a couple things. A week ago, a few of the employment services staff at DSC attended the National APSE conference, and that's the Association of People Supporting Employment First. So we took away new practices, ideas, and connected with other agencies around the country who are doing really great things. So that was a huge benefit and a great time. And also recently we've been supporting somebody who's got a job stocking at Walgreens. This young man has demonstrated a great talent for organization and systems. And because of that, he was offered a job in the pharmacy. So with his employment support through DSC, he's obtained his pharmacy tech license and is enjoying, that work. So it was a huge win. That's all I have for today.
Can I piggyback on AJ's real quick? My Patty Walters, I just want to say, because he minimized it,
He came back from that conference and said it was the best conference he's ever been to in his life, and I've never seen so much enthusiasm. And he's ordered lots of items to be support resources and materials for the community employment team. So I feel like he kind of tampered that down a little bit and thought you needed to hear it. And the other piece that he mentioned with the pharmacy tech is the staff also had to be certified as a pharmacy tech in order to support the person and in obtaining their tech, which I thought was interesting. But so we do have somebody now that has that skill set, and we can hit them all. So.
You'll see us at your next pharmacy.
We'll see you at Walmart and Sam's. And.
Angela Yost has her hand up online.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to let you know that I had mentioned a little while back that we had a couple through the CLSTA program that was working towards going to Indianapolis, and that happened in May. They went to the Indy 500 and had an excellent time, and then they also went to the Indianapolis Zoo, where they did an elephant encounter. I think it was like an elephant care thing. They were really excited for everything that they got to do, took a lot of pictures. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. And then also with working closely with DSC, we were able to fund 15 individuals for Camp New Hope this year as well. So. And also, we did pass out several Disability Expo books at the Juneteenth event. And I think anyone that either we missed or that went to Community Choices first, like they came to us and they already had the book. So I had several people tell me as I was handing them the book that they attend the expo and that they look forward to it. So just wanted to share that as well.
Paula, turn your microphone on.
Yeah, I just want to say, we've been working with the family we so really know, and we in the final stages of developing also faith, and when we get back properly in early fall or October, we will chat with you guys and thank you for that information today.
That stupid microphone turned itself off. I don't know what's going on. Okay, thank you for that, Paula. Any other comments? Okay, I think county board input.
Good morning, all. I have no input for today, but appreciate the information that you've passed on.
Thank you. Mental health board?
They are not meeting this evening.
Board announcements. We do have something. Diane has a shirt to display and make a little announcement.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about DSC again. AJ is over there, and this is actually for you to take back with you. This I've been working with, I had the great pleasure of meeting Christina Woolley, who is, her son and my daughter are on the same Special Olympics team, so we've been getting to know each other over the last few years. And we've talked a little bit about some of the stuff they do at the Crow. And over the last several months, probably since just before Christmas, we started talking about setting up something called a sublimation station for them to take their crafting and artistry to a new level. And yesterday we got that set up for them, and we created the first item. They created the first item. So this is original artwork from one of the participants in the program named Lucas, I believe, or Luke. And so this is his original artwork pressed onto a T-shirt that he can fully, you know, take out into the community and sell as an entrepreneur. It was so much fun to watch it all come to pass over the last several months, and I'm thrilled to be part of that. And great job, AJ. I'm very excited about what you guys are doing over at the Crow. So thank you.
The Crow is a project that is funded by the DDB, and we're happy to do it. Any other board announcements? Okay, I have one. This is not related to, well, it's kind of a little related. This is the 25th year that I've done a fundraising bicycle ride for Habitat for Humanity, which is another good organization not funded by the DDB. And if anybody is interested in getting one of my fundraising letters, just see me afterwards and I'll hand it to you. But I ride my bicycle 500 miles. It used to be in a week. Now it's in a month. But I want to tell you I have completed 500 miles this month. So now I'm working on fundraising. One more announcement.
The next board meeting is not July 22nd. It's July 29. Sorry about that.
Thanks for that correction, Lynn. Okay, so we'll hope to see everyone July 29 at 9 a.m. in person if possible. Everyone have a very good month. Watch out for bad weather. Meeting is adjourned.
Recording stopped.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You lost interest. Have a good one.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's like when I do forward emails, people don't read them. So for so many people to tell me, oh, why don't you forward, why don't you send me this, you know, emphasizing that I'm not having fair conversations with the whole company. It's just kind of like,
I feel your you pain. Know, like, I feel your yeah, pain. Yeah.
It's just kind of, I'm just, but you're right about like, if we get, if somebody were to say, hey, you're a government entity, you can't be lobbying.
But if they want to get us, they'll get us. And they're getting us anyway. So
that's a great thing to get us on. Yeah. Because you're right. If the federal government is going to break every rule, let us break that one. The one that says they shouldn't be breaking.
Yeah.
Like, you're 100% right. This is the hill to die on. So maybe we should start posting opportunities for public.